Good morning. My name is Liza Getchos. I represent Diva International, Inc., the appellant. The question before the court is whether a person is required to simultaneously work for others in order to be considered an independent contractor. The answer is no. The ICAO erred as a matter of law because it considered Karskadin's lack of contemporaneous work for others as dispositive of the independent contractor requirement. Commission decisions may be set aside if they are erroneous as a matter of law. The two prerequisites to independent contractor status are that the worker be free from direction and control and customarily engaged in an independent trade. The statute provides two equal ways to evidence independent contractor status, to evidence those two prerequisites.
And the first, say both of those conditions must be present in order to be an independent contractor?
Correct. And they are, so the two conditions are free from direction and control and customarily engaged in an independent trade. And then there's two ways to evidence those two prerequisites. And the first is a written contract that satisfies subsection C of the statute. And the second is showing that the conditions under subsection B exist.
And just to make things crystal clear.
Yes.
There is no contention that there was a written contract here, right? We're
correct.
Looking at subsection B. That's the test.
I agreed.
Thank you. Yes.
So therein lies the problem. Under subsection C, it is the quintessential circular exercise because the definition uses the terms being defined as part of the definition. It says you can show that an individual is free from direction and control and customarily engaged in an independent trade by showing that that individual is free from direction and control and customarily engaged. So there's no definition in the statute on what it means to be free from direction and control or customarily engaged. The statute's only guidance is under subsection C of the statute, and those are the nine factors that apply to a written contract. However, divisions of this court have always looked to those nine factors to define whether an individual is free from direction and control and customarily engaged in an independent trade.
Would that have to be the case? Is there anything in the statute that indicates that you have to look at those factors if it's not a contract case?
The statute, by its terms, applies to written contracts. However, when there is no guidance in the statute, we can look to what the legislature did put in the statute. And the legislature did put these nine factors in, and they do define what it means to be free from direction and control and customarily engaged.
But when you say divisions have always looked to those nine factors, I mean, they haven't always done that, have they? I mean, divisions have looked to a variety of factors, some of which are included in those nine, but
that is correct.
I'm not sure all divisions have always said, okay, the first thing we got to do is immediately go to those nine factors in subsection C.
The divisions always look to multiple factors. And the starting point for the majority of the divisions are the nine factors. And divisions of this court also reject treating any factor as dispositive, starting with Rent-A-Mom, which was a control factor case. A division of this court said that the ability to terminate employment could not be dispositive of the control requirement. In Longview, a division of this court held that a individual's exclusive work for a company for 3 months could not be dispositive of whether that individual was an independent contractor or an employee. And most recently in Soft Rock, a division of this court held that it is error as a matter of law not to consider each and every of the nine factors.
So let me just try to cut through this for a minute. I mean, it's clear that your initial argument is the panel got it wrong as a matter of law because it relied on Soft Rock, and that's the way we should go. And then you've got that logistics case out there that goes the other way, okay? But do we have to even deal with that? I mean, because the panel had an alternate ruling and it said, doesn't matter about Soft Rock and logistics. The fact is, when you look at the record, the hearing officer did consider a variety of factors, and under Soft Rock, that's good enough. So help me with that.
Well, there are three reasons that the panel could be set, the order of the panel could be set aside. The first is what you just said, that they didn't consider the 9 factors. The second is that they applied a factor that doesn't exist in the statute, which is simultaneous engagement for others. And I'll get to that in a second, because I think what you want me to focus on is why we can't look at the factors they did rely on. And the reason is that under 874.107, which is the standard of review for setting aside panel orders, the findings of the ICIO need to be supported by the evidence, and they're not supported by the evidence. Each of the factors cited by the ICIO weighs in favor of independent contractor status. The factors that the ICIO cited, and those are the ones that we can focus on. We don't focus on every detail that's in the record, because if we're focusing on their order, we focus on their order.
Let me just interrupt for a second. Yeah. So are we precluded from looking at the record as a whole, whether or not the ICIO made findings on other factors as well? I mean, what is our role as an appellate court in terms of looking at the record?
Well, if you are reviewing it under this, so there's two ways I think you can revert, you can set aside the panel order as a matter of law. And the third way you can do it on a factual level is that the evidence is not supported by the evidence. And you have to look at the findings of fact by the ICIO. However, if there's no conflict in the evidence, which I also think is the case here, you, as the court, are not bound by the findings of the commission, and you can make your own conclusions of law. And I think you can do that here, because the findings that the ICIO looked to were the Karskadon's establishment of the business. They said that wasn't enough for independent contractor status, but that usually weighs in favor of independent contractor status. They found that DIVA did not prohibit claimant from taking on other clients or performing the same or similar services. That also weighs in favor of independent contractor status. You can conclude that weighs in favor of independent contractor status. The ICIO found that DIVA hired the claimant for her knowledge and expertise and left it up to her on how to accomplish the work. That also weighs in favor of independent contractor status.
But doesn't that factor go to control? And that control isn't an issue here.
Well, you're right. The panel found that DIVA did not control Karskadon at all. And that is not subject to your review. You're only looking to the other prongs, but none of the other prongs weigh in favor of a determination that she was an independent contractor.
So how about such things as evidence in the record that she held herself out as the marketing manager, that she had a DIVA business card, that she had a DIVA email address? Where does all that play into the analysis here?
Well, if the court is going to look beyond the findings of fact of the ICIO, they need to look at the whole record. And the whole record will show that she had her own business cards, that she worked out of her own home, that she hired her own assistants, that she set her own hours, that she set her own vacations. But I don't think the court even needs to get there, because the real reason that the panel found that she was an independent contractor, or sorry, that she found she was an employee, is that she was not simultaneously working for others. And that has no statutory basis whatsoever.
Well, let me interrupt you for a moment, counsel, to ask this question. As I understand it, there's basically no dispute that the claimant was engaged in an independent business.
Correct.
Isn't the dispute whether she was customarily engaged in the independent business, and isn't that necessarily an issue of fact to be determined by the hearing officer if there's conflicting evidence? And I'm looking at the Barge case and the Carpet Exchange case, where they had instances where there was simultaneous engagement or simultaneous business going on, but they said it was too minimal. Isn't that what the hearing officer did here?
In part, customarily is not defined in the statute.
I know.
There's one.
I looked.
And there's only one case that I could find, the Allstate Products case, which is a Court of Appeals opinion, and it says customarily means regularly or habitually. However, the only guidance in the statute, the only guidance that you have to look to on what a worker can do while they're working for others is under subsection C, Roman numeral 1. And that part of the statute says that the company cannot require an individual to work exclusively for it, but it can permit it. And that's our only guidance about what it means to whether a worker can work for the company and work for other at the same time.
So given that, I mean, I think the evidence is pretty clear here that the company did not require her that she work 100% of the time for them.
Correct.
And I think the hearing officer made that finding.
Correct.
But the hearing officer also made a finding that she effectively did work a overwhelming percentage of her time and earned an overwhelming percentage of her income doing diva work. So again, if those are factual findings and they are supported by the record, and you may or may not agree with whether they are or not, why isn't that something that we have to defer to?
Because customarily does not mean simultaneously. Simultaneously is a third requirement that the Locke case introduced in 1989. Well, the Locke case.
Well, but isn't it undisputed that she was doing it simultaneously here?
Yes, what? But the Locke case says that simultaneous engagement need not be proven on an hourly, daily, or weekly basis.
That's fine, but does it matter whether it was simultaneous here? As long as it was customary, if the finding is that it wasn't customary, what difference does it make that
because
it was simultaneous?
Because the panel only made the finding that it wasn't simultaneous. They didn't define what customarily means, and they didn't get into that discussion one way or the other. Customarily, if I am a handyman and I customarily am engaged in my profession, I could have one client and I could do all my services for that one client. That doesn't mean I'm not customarily engaged in an independent profession from this court who I do the handyman services for. Now, the one other, to the extent this court finds that customarily is ambiguous, and I submit that it probably is, the court should look to other statutes relating to the same subject matter. And the workers' compensation statute has the exact same 9 factors as the Employment Security Act factors. And it has the same circular definition for what it means to be independently engaged. And it also says that a worker's exclusive performance of work for others is not dispositive whether that person is an employee. And so I think the court needs to look to that statute as well in defining simultaneous engagement for others. And I will reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning. My name is Robert Altman, attorney registration number 8184. I am the attorney for Susan Carr-Skadden, the appellee in this matter. In this case, we have been presented with an argument on appeal that this case is somehow determinative based upon the distinction between the Western Distributors and the Soft Rock case. The issues, however, were simply those of a garden variety factual dispute resolved after numerous hearings by the hearing officer, who found, having considered a variety of factors, not simply whether there was some absence of simultaneous employment with others, but in the overall scheme of things, there was a finding supported by substantial evidence, albeit conflicting, that 99% of Ms. Carr-Skadden's work was with this employer, Diva International. She held the position of the sales and marketing manager. Although she may have had an entity created in 2008, it played no role in this proceeding, and it played no role in her relationship with either Diva, nor was it ever shown to play any role with anyone else. Yes, she did have a very small consulting practice that was in addition to the lengthy hours, the 99% of her working time that she spent for working for Diva International. While we may not have liked the finding that Diva International did not have the sufficient control, did not have control of Ms. Karskadden for purposes of the statute, it is also clear that Ms. Karskadden was working intimately with Diva, that her daily activities were essentially all directed towards Diva. There was no contrary evidence on that point. The hearing officer, I do not believe, had the opportunity to review the Soft Rock decision at the time that decision was made, since it was issued about 6 days before the hearing officer's decision. But by the time this case made it to the ICAO, the panel was aware of the Soft Rock decision and was also aware, of the Western Logistics decision. So, which was then decided October 25 of 2012. The panel properly looked to see whether there was substantial evidence to support the findings of the hearing officer and found that there were. It also, and looked at it from a traditional standpoint of, has the putative employer met its burden of showing that this putative employee was customarily engaged in her own independent enterprise, and found that she was not, and that was amply supported by the evidence. At the same time, there was no one dispositive factor, and the panel properly pointed out that there were other factors that were evaluated as if the hearing officer had actually taken a look at the nine factors. The hearing officer didn't cite specifically the nine factors, and I would submit under the statute, it only is obligated to follow 870.115.1b because there's no written contract.
But you wouldn't disagree, would you, that there would be nothing wrong with the hearing officer in doing its evaluation, saying, I'm going to look at some or all of those nine factors just because they help me?
I would see nothing wrong with that, and I think that Western Logistics pointed that out, that some of these may be helpful factors because this is fact determinative. Even under Section C, it does say that, for example, had there been a written agreement, if the written agreement adequately covers the elements that are necessary to the determination, even that agreement doesn't necessarily have to contain all nine factors. So there is certainly discretion involved. But what I think the appellant is doing here is looking at the fact that simply because the panel recited that several of the factors were actually considered, they were simply pointing out that the hearing officer was making a discretionary decision. And frankly, a key factor is there was no written contract.
Can we stop the clock for just a moment? Apparently you're receiving some emails and they're interfering no. with our recording.
No,
somebody does. If you've got a BlackBerry or whatever, turn it off, please, because somebody's email is coming through the system. Please go ahead.
Mine is safely in my car.
Smart move. Yeah. Mr. Allman, I have a question for you. Okay. Isn't it undisputed that Karskadden
yes.
was performing simultaneous work for her own clients? That's undisputed here.
I think so, in that throughout her employment with Diva, she did have some other customers. But over time, they were a very decreasing proportion over time.
So is it a factual determination of whether the person, the putative employee, was customarily engaged in an independent trade?
Absolutely. And the fact that, for example, you could have a circumstance where a person works 50 hours a week for an employer and simply has some independent consulting business on the side. I mean, it wouldn't necessarily mean that an employee somehow becomes an independent contractor because they do some extra things on the side. But she engaged in no conduct that was related to the business with Diva with regard to any time that she spent apart from Diva. It was unrelated. Maybe in the same health industry in general, but completely unrelated.
So in that respect, if you're focusing on customarily as a fact issue, what are the kinds of things that a hearing officer, in making that determination, and we as an appellate court in looking at the record, should look at? For example, is it the percentage of money she made from Diva? Is it the amount of time that she spent? If it's not those things, what kinds of things play into that factual determination that Judge Terry asked about?
Well, the determination here, I think, in looking at the hearing officer's decision, the determination here was based upon the fact that two things. Time and income were 99% in favor of her work with Diva. So those are two just common sense approaches to looking at this circumstance. In addition, with regard to her work for Diva, she actually held a position with Diva, which would seem contrary to somehow you're customarily employed, but you actually have an employment position with this company. So
you mean a job title?
A job title. And you're using the indicia of employment of, if you want to email her, it's at, you know, divacup.com. If you want to, if correspondence is coming, it's coming on their letterhead. I mean, all of the representations would show that this is regular employment. And there's no contrary evidence that says that there was anything, there's no evidence in this record that shows anything that would support a customary usage of some other business, nor is there evidence of any degree of independent establishment of a business. There are a few factors. Yes, there was an LLC, but there's no evidence of it being used.
Can you help me with the meaning of customary? Because I haven't really found a definition for it in the case law, the statute.
Well, I think what it means is if you look at the ordinary work week and you're looking at it as a 40-hour week, and you've got someone who works 40 hours plus a week for you, it's going to be hard to argue that they're customarily engaged in some independent business, absent something unusual. So I think customarily means generally, routinely, it's part of your business establishment, you're holding yourself out in some fashion, and it's got to be something really significant, and at the same time, it also doesn't do away with the fact of that when you look at the circumstances of how you were working for that employer, I would submit, even if you have someone who customarily has an outside business, when you have circumstances such as here with Diva, no contract, a title and position with the company, regular pay, daily, lengthy work, 40 plus hours a week. Why would we think that this would somehow be the hallmark of some sort of independent relationship as to them, when obviously the employer treated her as an individual? They didn't treat her as an entity. They didn't write a contract. They didn't do any of those things that would have supported their position if they want to say that she was a contractor. So I think in this case, I don't know answer to what customarily means. However, in this case, there's no evidence that would support that Ms. Karskadon was customarily engaged in any independent enterprise. It was sporadic, as the finding was. The efforts were few and far between. They may have come up at various times, but it was not a regular, it was not a regular activity on her behalf. So in that sense, when it's not regular, I think it's not customary. I think in this case, the panel did an excellent job of reviewing the record. It did an and the hearing officer perfectly, properly stated that with conflicting evidence, that the employer, the putative employer, had not met its burden of proof of trying to establish that Ms. Karskadon was an independent contractor. There's no reason for this decision to be somehow based upon the outcome of Western Logistics or Soft Rock, because there wasn't just some dividing line decision here where, oh, there wasn't there's an absence of simultaneous work, therefore there, you know, this person is an employee. No, the various common law and statutory factors were properly considered. In addition, I would note that in Soft Rock in particular, and actually in Western Logistics, these were all contract cases. The employer who is wanting to demonstrate that its five-year employee is actually a contractor who doesn't have a written agreement and doesn't choose to honor the requirements of Colorado's unemployment law, then is going to be responsible for payment of unemployment insurance when it chooses to terminate that employee. That's all I have. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal?
I think the problem is that the panel equated customarily engaged in an independent trade with customarily engaged in an independent trade for others. And that's not what the statute says. The statute simply says customarily engaged in an independent trade. It doesn't mean that you have to have that trade with other clients, and it doesn't mean you have to do it substantially. And you, Judge Terry, you asked about the carpet exchange case and the barge case. And those cases took the simultaneous engaged for other test from the Locke opinion. And not only did they adopt that erroneous reasoning, but they added another requirement, which was that the work for others needed to be, it couldn't be insubstantial. That's also not in the statute. And so if the court is looking to figure out what customarily means, it just means that you're customarily engaged in an independent profession. Here, a consulting business called Karskadon and Associates. In other trades, it could be plumbing. It could be whatever the trade is. It doesn't mean that you have to be customarily, simultaneously engaged in those services for other people. Now the
But would there be anything wrong with looking at that, the set of factors and evidence that go to that issue in order to make a determination about whether it's something is customary or not? I mean, it seems to me there's a difference between saying, well, it's not necessarily dispositive, and saying, well, you've got to look at the totality of the circumstances, and certainly some things you ought to be looking at is, you know, how much time is this person spending with this employer? How much money are they making? How are they holding themselves out? Those wouldn't be exclusive, but there would be nothing wrong in taking those into account, would there be?
It's only wrong where the panel only considers that as the dispositive factor. That's where it's wrong. There's many opinions of this court that say you cannot treat one factor as dispositive, and that's what the panel did. And allowing Ms. Karskadon to be characterized as an employee allows her to have all of the benefits of an independent contractor status and none of the burdens of being an employee. She can report to work whenever she wants. She can set her scope of work. She can set her engagement. And then after the fact, she can claim unemployment benefits just because the employer didn't know she was subject, that she wasn't working for others.
Thank you, counsel. I see that your time has expired. Thank you to both counsel for your briefing and arguments. We appreciate them very much. The case will now stand submitted, and you'll receive a written opinion in due course.